I'm Cameron. I'm an alcoholic.
Cameron.
Wow. I want to thank Mark for asking me to come. Dylan, thanks for the warm welcome. I am really OG. I had to go to the bathroom before I started, man, so I'm sorry. Speaking of OG, what makes me a real OG is I was born here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Antelope Valley Hospital. 1965. That makes me 59. I kid you not, if you go out L8, a mile and a half before you get to Paraclete, before you get to 30th, that was DP Friday. Friday mornings before school on Fridays, Mickey's Big Mouth, bongs, and half day Friday. And that was, and it didn't begin there and didn't end there. My sobriety date is Halloween. October 31st, 2009. My sponsor is Paul S. He actually knows I'm one of his guys. My home group is the Thousand Oaks Sunday Night Speaker Meeting, and I'm grateful for all those things. And I'm really grateful for the carload of guys we brought up today. It was awesome. We had a good time. It was a good time for fellowship. We had two carloads, some of the newer guys, and a guy I've known longer than anybody else in sobriety. I've known Lee here for 28 years. I took him to his first meeting, and although, you know, neither of us have stayed sober, of our group, there's only three of us left of, I think, 10, maybe eight, and that's just the way it is. Those are just the numbers. So yeah, man, I grew up here. It was an exciting time to be growing up in Lancaster, Avenue K. I grew up at 2741 West Avenue K. I was the last house on the street before the college. There was no houses behind us. There was one strip of houses in front of us. And the desert was our party place. And that was our happy place, man. We had motorcycles. Avenue K was a two-lane street. I kid you not, we had horses. You know, we'd have horses on the front lawn. It was a fun place to grow up. And I have to tell you, I've lived a charmed life. I've got no good reason to be an alcoholic. Other than I'm selfish and self-centered and kind of a punk. But I'll get to that part too. So I grew up feeling different. My mom and dad were a little bit older. My brother and sister are 11 and 10 years older than I am, respectively. I just knew they were older, right? So when I was 6 and 7 years old, they left the house to go to college. And then my dad split, and then we had this house. It was just me and my mom. My mom was going nuts. Her life had unraveled. Her older kids are out of the house. Her husband has been sleeping with this 18-year-old girl from the office. And her life was upside down, and my life was just weird. I didn't know how to handle any of it. I do remember the parties at the house. You know, it was a small town. Lancaster at the time was less than 40,000 people. In fact, I saw the sign coming up here tonight. Palmdale's 152,000 people. And I remember when it said 19,000. Makes me an OG. Finally saying OG. I've been wanting to say that my whole life. And mean it. I'm still a punk, but I'm an OG. So, you know, I felt, you know, I don't know if I felt different. But it was weird going to the store and my older brother pretending to be my dad. He was having fun with that kind of stuff. So I didn't have that sibling rivalry, that sibling thing that all my friends' families had. And I wanted that. The first thing I remember is wanting what you had. My cousin Andy, for Christmas, he got the race car set. And it was bad. It was awesome. And I got this funky one with batteries that didn't work. And my dad didn't know how to put it together. And I felt lesser than because my cousin Andy had the awesome one. The Wells family across the street, John, the dad, had been a test pilot and was head of the L-1011 program where Skunk Works is now. Is where they used to build the L-1011s, and he was head of that project. You know, Doug Scott, his dad was astronaut Scott, Dave Scott. So all my friends' dads were like test pilots and astronauts and engineers. Eric Richards' dad built airplanes in his shed in the back of the house, the back of the yard, and I didn't have any of that stuff. you know, my dad was building a business here in town, and he was really successful, and my family did really well. And I have a charmed life. I didn't want or need for anything except what you had. I wanted your family life. I wanted to be able to, I'd go to the, you know, the Wells house after school, and, you know, Mrs. Wells was there making snacks and doing stuff for the kids. And I thought that was awesome. My mom had tried to put her life back together and got a job at AV College, working for financial aid. And she ended up working there 30 years, became the financial aid director. And towards the end of her career, I totally embarrassed her. I'll get to that point too. I just felt different than you. And then in first grade, we had to take these tests where they would put you in certain classes. And all my friends got put into Mrs. Pegasus' class. I got put into Mrs. Badland's class because I couldn't read. And I felt different then. And I Jimmy Tindall and I went to the big gray and blue bus because we had speech impediments. I couldn't say my R's. I was a waskly wabbit, and I stuttered. And Jimmy had his own thing going on. And so we'd get pulled out of class, and to go to the bus, you know. And they weren't making it look good. They're like, come on, bus time. And I just felt, you know, I felt different from you. And I didn't know, you know, I didn't equate that then. I can tell you now, oh, that's how I felt, right? Never knew I needed a drink. I needed something to take the edge off. I didn't know I had an edge. I just, you know, they hadn't diagnosed ADD yet. So I was the kid in class who was always funny, getting sent to the back of the room, teachers putting my desk outside the room. My seventh grade home ec teacher tying my hands behind my back, like literally tying my hands behind my back, because I couldn't stop doing it. So I was beating on things from the time I was 4 or 5 years old, and I had this thing for rhythms, and I liked playing the drums, and my parents got me my first toy drum set at 5. I beat the crap out of it in about a week. But I didn't stop hitting on things. So God bless my mom. She allowed me to start taking drum lessons at Sunnydale. You know what Sunnydale School is. I started taking drum lessons in fourth grade, and I kept at it. In fact, to this day, it's really the only thing I've kept at my whole life. I'm a good starter, and I never finish anything. And I certainly didn't finish my musical career, but I had potential for a musical career. So during all this time, what connected me to you was my athletic ability and gave me a sense of well-being and made me feel as good as you. And I didn't know what I needed. I needed to feel better than you. And because all my friends were older, I excelled in athletics. I was gifted a little bit in athletics. And look, Lancaster is a small town, so you can get pretty good pretty fast compared to some of the other kids. Because there was no one else here. But I did pretty well, and I got a lot of self-worth at that. We used to have an ice rink here in town called Melody Ice Gardens over on Trevor and after Division, and I started playing hockey when I was 6 years old, played that through until I got to high school, and I played tennis, I played everything. I was, like I said, I was a spaz at AV College next to us, so I played against the tennis courts there. I knew all the coaches, so I played every sport with every college team there as well. So I ended up in high school, I lettered in 5 sports, and in college, played 3 sports, 4, 3 or 4, 3 sports. I guess we'll get to that in a minute. So I never did well in school. I had ADD. I didn't know I had ADD. I just, like when Ruben was doing the 12 traditions, I wanted to listen to Ruben do the 12 traditions because it would get me out of me, right? I was like focused on Ruben, like, but dude, I lost you on like tradition 4. I was in there for a minute, tradition 8, and I got you at the end of 12, and when he said finally, it's tradition 12, I was like, okay, cool, I'm back. that's me on the Natch. So I wanted to do well in school. My friends did well. You know, before we'd go to ball practice, my friends would sit and do their homework, and I just couldn't. What are you doing? I'm doing my homework. I'm like, come on, let's go. And I could never do it. I tried to, just like when I went to AV College. I was a freshman for like 9 years. So during high school, I started playing music. I got to tell you, Lancaster was a hotbed for musicians back in the 60s and 70s and part of the 80s. My high school and college band teacher was Lee Madelon. He's probably still here in town. And Lee knew all the cats in the business. And I started playing jazz at the Clubhouse 41, which is this restaurant that was here in town. And I started playing on the rock bands. And here I am trying to fit in. I remember I liked bands like Oingo Boingo and Missing Persons, but I'm playing in a hard rock band called Savage Reign. That's R-E-I-G-N. And we're just banging it. But, you know, I'm playing hard rock with these guys, but I'm listening to this music, and I can't tell them I really like this music more. And all that would be happening after, like, I'd get home from basketball practice. I should probably do my homework. But I go from basketball practice to music practice, and I needed that. I needed to be on the go all the time. So I'd be up from 6 or 7 in the morning up until midnight, playing music with big guys, and that's where I found some of the magic elixir, and it wasn't alcohol. What I found out when I was 13 or 14 is I had GERD, I had acid reflux as a teenager, and when I drank, it made it even worse. In eighth grade, for the Rose Bowl, we're huge USC football fans. Sorry if that angers anybody, but fight on. We went to the Rose Bowl, and I had gotten wasted the night before. It was my first real time drinking, and the plan was to drink wine coolers. They hadn't been invented yet, so we were supposed to take my stepmom's Almaden wine and mix that with 7-Up, and I had a tiny bit of that. I was like, okay, I got this. So I went and got my dad's 32-ounce cup, went to his cupboard, and filled it up with vermouth and scotch and vodka, and then I put about this much ginger ale in, and I thought, oh, it needs ice. So I dropped maybe like one piece of ice in just to cool it off, and it immediately just went psh. It just melted, and I drank half of it, and I just remember the horrible sensation, and I caught my breath, and nothing happened. I didn't know what was going to happen. So I drank the whole thing. And then I filled it up again. And I drank most of that, but I don't really remember much else. Now, for some of you tough guys and tough ladies, you guys wake up in the morning, throw up, you vomit all yourself, like, oh, that's fun, I want to do it again. No. No. So my dad knew it was up. There was three of us. There was me, John Owens, and my cousin Andy. And my dad took us to the Rose Bowl. So instead of taking the 14 to the 5 to the 210 and over, no, he took the 2, Angeles Crest High. Worst experience of my life at that moment. I didn't drink again for a long time. I had alcohol poisoning. And the only benefit that came from that day is that USC beat Michigan. And that's really how my drinking goes. I gotta tell you, we'll talk about some other stuff, but my drinking is I vomit projectile style till I bleed. I get esophageal hemorrhages. I have all these things that, you know, it hurts too much, you know? But having met the older guys in the bands, you know, I learned how to smoke pot a little bit. And then when I was getting tired from school, practice for sports, and practice for music, I was introduced to something called cocaine. We hit it off really well. Uh, so, so as I talked to you tonight about my alcoholism and I mentioned the other stuff I've done throughout my life, the one thing I want to convey to you is there are two things, really. My love for Alcoholics Anonymous, but two, there's always a bottom below the bottom I know. And in my life, I've experienced lows physically, you know, homeless crackhead in San Francisco. And then I've had the despair, the quiet despair of being alone, knowing that I'm going to prison. And there's no one, you know, I've lived a charmed life, but I've put myself in a position where I'm going to go to prison. And mommy's dead, daddy's dead. There's no one who's going to bail me out of the situation. No one's going to bail me out figuratively or literally. I've dug myself a hole. And that sobering moment still didn't stop me from doing what I had to do. So just to get this out so you know, there's other stuff in my life. Yeah, cocaine. I love the feeling of crystal methamphetamine in my veins, too. And there's so many different lengths I went to feel good, to get me out of feeling out of the here and now, and just connecting. I didn't know what I needed to connect to or connect with. And that's a hard thing for me to articulate to you, let alone somebody who's not an alcoholic. It doesn't make sense. You know, I didn't know what to connect to or connect to what. And I come to find out later on it's God. So through hook or crook, after failing as a musician, I went on the road a couple times. I was never asked back. Bands would implode. I dropped out of college countless times. Every sport I played, I wasn't invited back for my sophomore season because I hadn't accumulated enough graduate credits to play my sophomore season. So I played, you know, I played football, I played basketball, I played tennis. I want to say I played baseball. They didn't allow me to play baseball. They said enough is enough. That was it. I needed to do something. And so I went to work for Domino's. I became a Domino's driver. That seemed like the most logical, sensible thing to do. Drop out of college, live at mom's, and drive for Domino's. Now, at the time, there was only one Domino's here in town. It was on 10th Street West and off of J. And we had the whole Antelope Valley in 30 minutes to get your pizza to you. And it was a fun job. I had a lot of fun. But my cocaine use grew quite a bit at that point, and I would start getting myself in trouble. As Blake was talking about earlier, you know, fun with problems and just problems, I was starting to get in trouble a lot. I got fired from that job, and it turns out I had a court date to go to, and I didn't want to go to it. So I told my mom I had a cocaine problem, and so I went to my first rehab in June 1985, St. John's Hospital in Santa Monica, which is not even there anymore. Another statistic I should throw out there: from 1985 to 2005, I've spent nearly 5 years of my life in not prison yet, but just rehabs and therapeutic communities based on behavioral modification, like Delancey Street and Walden House. Just a treat of a place to live. I have to tell you that up to this point, alcohol hadn't been my primary source of getting out of me. I would try to drink, but every time I did, I would have this projectile vomit, hemorrhage, and I just couldn't do it. I couldn't continue to do cocaine anymore because I simply didn't dig being a homeless crackhead in San Francisco. Being homeless in San Francisco wasn't my gig either. I'm just not a tough guy, and I couldn't do that. And I was done, but I couldn't stop. So I got a job in a restaurant. And during this whole period of my time, I would find these restaurants to work out as a cook. The one thing I found about cooking in restaurants is I got that team atmosphere. I'd line up with the guys, and we'd work together, and it was like a team, like a sports team. The only problem was I wasn't gifted like I was in athletics. I wasn't a very good cook at all. But I liked it, you know, and I kept doing it. So I ended up going to culinary school in San Francisco. Also dropped out of culinary school in San Francisco, so I'm a culinary dropout. But the one thing that happened is I was working in a restaurant, and I cut my finger wide open, and I had 6 weeks off for work. And in that time, I decided I wanted to learn how to drink. So I bought a handle of tequila and sat in the kitchen, and I did one shot at a time and tried to learn how to drink without projectile vomiting. And I found out, for me, the clue is that the key was not tequila, not anything brown, but it had to be vodka, and usually about a pint max. And so my daily regime for the next 4 years were, in my chef pants, I would have airline bottles. And so I could manage my drinking with just one airline shot at a time, or on my day off, I could swig a half a pint, nap. That's as exciting as my story is going to get from my drinking. I drink a half pint, I nap, and then I wait for her to get home. When she gets home, she's wondering what that smell is, and so when she goes to kiss me, she goes, and I go, it's vodka, she can't smell it, right? So fast forward 2 years, poor girl, Julia, she did not deserve me. And I certainly didn't deserve her. She was well above my pay grade, and I was blessed to have that much time with her. But she came to me one day, one night actually, and she had two paper bags, shopping bags, doubled, and they were full of vodka bottles. And she came into the kitchen, dropped them, and she goes, "What the F is this?" And I knew my jig was up. I didn't even realize myself that I was at the point where I had started leaving bottles everywhere. Now, we used to get a quart of wood, and I would put the quart of wood away, and I'd put hiding places in the quart of wood, so I had to go and get wood for the fireplace. And I knew that, but I had no idea the volume I had, even for how long I had it. So the next day I went to work, I came home, and my sister, who was sober at the time, was sitting on my couch waiting for me. And I said, "Hi, what are you doing here?" "Oh, hi. We've come to pack up your stuff and take you home." "Well, this is my home." And she said, "Well, not anymore. We're going to pack up your stuff and take you back to Mom's house. Your brother's flying up this morning. We're going to pack up your stuff and we're going to drive down tomorrow." And I had this warm sense of it being over. And I wasn't sure what that meant. I just had this sensation of, like, I'm screwed, but at the same time, a sense of relief. And I can't, again, it's hard for me to articulate having both the relief and knowing for the first time, look, I damaged a lot of women in my life, my mom being the primary one. But every girl that's ever been in a relationship with me, I had barbecued that relationship to the ground, and including this one. But this one mattered. She was good. She was a good person, and she was just, I loved her, and it mattered. And I knew for the first time what I had done to somebody else. Could I have been blind that long? And I guess I was. I mean, I guess I was just blind and so selfish and self-centered that I had never noticed in my life what I had done to somebody else. And then at that moment, it made me realize what I had done to my mom. And then I had a moment of clarity also, that when she had dropped the bag of bottles two nights previously, I remember my dad telling me about the story when, after my grandfather died, my dad had gone to his house and found all of the alcohol bottles strewn throughout his house. So, like Blake mentioned earlier, is it a family disease? Maybe. Because my grandfather was an alcoholic. My dad was an alcoholic. He died an alcoholic. Because their alcohol doesn't make me an alcoholic, but there must be something to it. I mean, I'm just saying, in my experience, there's got to be something to it. Wow, I need to hurry up. So with that said, I was living in Thousand Oaks about a week later, and that's where I met Lee. I met Lee in Thousand Oaks. I went to rehab number 4 or 5, and my life really started to change. I started doing what you did. My life got better. But I didn't do one thing you guys did, the steps. So I'm the guy who gets sober and my life gets cleaned up because I've seen Alcoholics Anonymous for my family members. But I don't want to do the work you're going to do because I'm different and I'm lazy. But I found I end up in jail, literally prison jail, or dead like some of our buddies. With the threat of going to prison, I decided I'd try the steps for the first time. And by doing them for the first time, to the best of my ability, where you're sitting, Blake, I sat in my meeting that night, and I felt different. I didn't feel like, but I felt like I belonged. I didn't feel like a poser anymore. And I had this sense of, okay, I feel honest. I'm clean with you guys. I'm on level ground with you now, and that really set me to the point where I am now. I'm pretty lucky. I had never held a job for more than two years, and since having done the steps, I've actually gotten married. Like, I'm not very quick. I didn't get married till I was 42 because that was not worth marrying. I didn't have my daughter. My wife didn't have my daughter till I was 47. So, yeah, I'm 59 years old with an 11-year-old daughter. And I'm not the best dad, and I'm not the best wife, and I'm not the best employee. But I can tell you that you've taught me, and the steps and traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous have taught me to be a good employee. I've been at the same employment place for 15 years now. They like having me there, and I like being there. And we were just told this two months ago, that our school's closing. I'm still a cook. I'm the lunch lady at a private school. And 15 years ago, I would have, like, if I would ever thought about this is where I end up, you know, I was blessed to work at the finest restaurants in the world, particularly in Los Angeles and San Francisco. The chefs I worked with are the guys and ladies you see on TV now. And I thought that was the road I was on, and it was definitely not. That part of the restaurant business chewed me up and spit me out like I was an appetizer. Not a very tasty one either. So I found this job, and in this job, I found... So, quick story. So, in this job, I work for the Catholics. I work for the Sisters of Notre Dame. By the way, I forgot to mention to you, I went to Paraclete. I got kicked out of Paraclete. Owed some amends. And I've been living amends for 15 years now at an all-girls Catholic school. Which is awesome. If they only knew. And you know, and it's funny because my boss, the guy who just retired, and a couple of my colleagues do know that I'm. They know who I was. And when I got hired at Lorena, I was not Lorena material at all. But you've taught me to become part of something bigger. You've taught me how to get out of myself and be of service. And in that Catholic environment, I'm not even Catholic, I found faith. I found my God. I found faith, not the Catholic God, but I've been blessed to find my God. And it's changed my life. I never thought I'd come to a podium and bless you. I have this relationship with God and have a sponsor who's teaching me how to have a relationship with God. That's an important thing in my life. It's more important than the relationship I have with my wife. It's more important than the relationship I have with my daughter, my employees. Having my relationship with God helps me to be a good friend to you, to be a good member of AA, to be a good father, to be a good husband. And I have to tell you, I'm sucking it up right now. I'm sucking it up as a husband. I'm sucking it up as a father. Things aren't going my way with my employment. And through all of this, I get to experience it. And how blessed am I? I get to walk through this really uncomfortable situation. I'm 59 years old. I got to look for a new job, maybe. A whole other subject. I have some resentments against the Sisters of Notre Dame. Some are they deserved? I don't know. This is the stuff I'm dealing with between me and God, and the things I'm really having to have my faith tested. Like I can tell you up here, I have faith now. Really? How are you doing at home? How's it going at work? What have you called the nuns today? I've said some really bad things under my breath, and vocally. And I'm lucky I have a job. But you know that's where I am as a human right now, and that's what connects me to you. That's what allows me to stand up here right now is to let you know that my life is awesome. I've lived a charmed life. And I still take stuff for granted because I'm a selfish, self-centered punk. I really am. It's just what I am. But I get the opportunity to be the man that God wants me to be, not what my daughter or my dog wants me to be. I get the opportunity to be the man that God is teaching me to be. And I would have not found that if I hadn't been here with you. I definitely wouldn't have found that if I didn't do the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I get to go home with these guys tonight, and it's going to be a fun drive home. I get to talk to Blake, you know, these new friends I have, they're newer to AA, and I remember I used to drive with my sponsor Paul to meetings all over, and I still look forward to that, you know, I still look forward to those drives with Paul. We could talk nothing about AA, we could talk nothing about sponsorship, and we're in the car, it all comes about. The only thing we've really been talking about is AA and sponsorship the whole time. And that's the relationship we have with each other and the bond that we've had through the years, because he's seen me be consistent. He's seen me suit up and show up. For me to be consistent at anything is a miracle in itself, man. We have this meditation thread we have in the morning. Our friend Steve sends out to us, and usually I've had the chance to do the 24-hour book. So that my life is like this. And this is one of my challenges. My wife and daughter sleep in one half of the house, and I sleep in the other. And it's been taxing on me lately. I get up really early in the morning, and it's difficult for them. I wake up them. I wake up the dogs, And it's best for them if I sleep there. But you know what? I want to sleep in the big bed. I want to sleep. And sometimes I do. But I want what I want. And it's my house. I want them to live their life around me. And that's not the reality. The reality is I'm there to be of service to them. I'm there to be a dad and show my daughter this is what you do to give to your family. I'm there for my wife, and I do not do it graciously, but I'm doing it better than I did yesterday. So I get up in the mornings. I have three 100-pound dogs, and yeah, it's a lot of poop. And she picks up the poop exactly early for the first round. But so I get in my car, and this is I don't know how it works for you. Like, you know, you get up and you pray right away. I don't. I get up, I take a shower, put my clothes quietly on, I get out the front door, I turn my car on, and I reach down here, and I grab my 24-hour day book and my big book. And I open up my 24-hour day book, and I just read the passage. And really, ADD boy here, I try to remember one thing. One thing. Can't even remember today's. It's gone. I'll refer back to it. I always do. Then I open up page 86 through 88. And I start at the bottom of the page, this third paragraph down to 86. I read that. Then I go to page 63, read the third set prayer. I go to page 76, read the seventh set prayer. And then I drive to work quietly. I don't turn the radio on. And those 10 to 15 minutes, thank you, those 10 to 15 minutes are prime. That's my prime. That's my priming for the day. And then again, like as I mentioned, Steve sends us out the meditation. We all have this dread. We all say something or we don't say something. But that reconnects me. I get a moment to think about what I read earlier and see if there's anything that I missed when Steve sends it out. That's important to me because that's a consistency throughout my day that keeps me connected and consistent, man. If there's anything spiritual I'm doing in my life at all, the most spiritual thing I'm probably going to do today, tomorrow, or the day after is having done it consistently. And that's just do this simple thing every day. This is awesome. It's great coming back home. I've got some, I feel kind of a little bit like I'm at the scene of the crime, but I've got a lot of good memories here. I love the Antelope Valley, and I really appreciate all of you. Thank you.